Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and we got a really special one for you today. Today, we're actually doing episode 100. Technically, it's actually 101 with a bonus episode we did, but it's quite the milestone for me, and I'm pretty proud of it, and we have something special planned. Today, we actually connect with my brother-in-law. His name is Dylan Peterson, and one of his good buddies from when he was 5 years old. His name is Stephen Bryant. The three of us today share some stories about my father-in-law, Larry Peterson. Larry passed away a little bit over a year ago. He was one of the first people that I asked to be on the podcast, but his level of progressed cancer didn't make that possible for him, so we unfortunately missed out on some stories. But that being said, he was a character, and he made plenty of stories for Dylan, Stephen, and myself. So let's just jump into this thing, guys. I hope you guys enjoy. This was an important one for me, and I want to thank you guys for helping me get to 100. Here's to 100 more. Thank you. All right, fellas, welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. How are you guys?
Really good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You know, it's been a long time coming. In fact, this is going to be a different episode than most because I'm not asking you gentlemen to tell your stories. I'm telling you to tell your favorite stories about someone who's important to all of us. So let's start this thing off with introducing who you folks are. And then Dylan, maybe after that, you can tell the folks who we're going to be hearing stories about today. So Dylan, go ahead.
Sounds good. Dylan, I'm Michael's brother-in-law. I live in Boulder, Colorado. Mostly hunt elk. I started, most of that has been in Washington State and then some here in Colorado, both the modern firearm and muzzleloader.
Perfect. Steven.
Hey, Steven Bryant here. I went to high school with Dylan, live in Washington now, Seattle, and started elk hunting up here. But before that, I hunted lots of whitetails in Texas when I lived there. So, yeah. And mostly modern firearm. And then same with Dylan, we started hunting muzzleloader, and then I bow hunt as well.
Perfect. Yeah. And so you guys are actually my first hunting buddies. And probably the people that told me my first hunting stories, which is pretty cool. Because obviously this is episode 100. I don't know if you guys knew that. And I'm having a huge giveaway. And at this point, somebody's probably already won that shit, but we're not going to worry about that right now. What we're going to do is tell the folks, Dylan, I'm going to let you tell them who we're telling them stories about, because it's someone that I wish we had had the chance to get on the podcast. But unfortunately, it never happened. So Dylan, why don't you explain the greatness of who we're going to hear about today?
Yeah. Thanks for honoring us with the 100th episode here. It is fun that I remember those first hunting trips with you. So this is all about my dad, Larry Bergie Peterson, and I've got a little background stuff that I think is relevant because people hunt all over the world. My dad was born in Saskatchewan, Canada. He was the son of immigrants from Denmark, but he moved to Calgary where I was born, and there in outside Calgary areas where his elk hunting experiences took place. But we moved down to Texas when I was, I don't know, 6 years old or something like that. And man, he really wanted to teach me hunting, but hunting in Texas wasn't his being in a stand and shooting deer. He really a purist in some ways around hunting elk on public land and tracking them, and couldn't do the elk hunting in Texas. Well, I moved up to Washington, and he got his wish. So somewhere in, I guess we were in our 20s. Steven, is that right? We're in our 20s when you first started hunting with him? Late 20s?
Yeah, I was
maybe
28.
30s. Yeah. And anyway, he hunted elk for meat. He wasn't really into trophy. He definitely wasn't into trophy hunting. He made sure to tell us that about every hunting trip. He always hunted cow elk. They were more prevalent out there in the National Forest outside Calgary, and he always said it tasted better. And that's a big part of his life in Canada. I've got faint memories, and I might be 4 or 5, of being in a garage in Cochrane, and there's several families around, and they're butchering the elk that they had harvested. And there's multiple elk, music playing, handful of families and adults. They were drinking, they were smoking. It was sort of a pretty jovial time. And I remember at one point him calling my name and looking up, and he put this white kneecap in my hand. It's just like a white ball that felt like a wet cue ball, which was one of my furthest back memories. And that's just to say that it's always kind of been elk hunting has been kind of anchored in my head from early days, even though I didn't get into it until my 20s. My dad used to remind me, he said that I was partially made out of elk, because that was about all the red meat I ate growing up in Canada. And he pointed out, that's why I'm so good at climbing mountains, is because I'm part elk.
That sounds like something Larry would say. Okay.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so fast forward into our late 20s, we moved to Washington State, and, you know, Stephen knew a bunch about hunting whitetail, but it was quite a difference hunting elk out in the national forest in eastern Washington. And those first few years, we really looked up to him. He taught us just about everything back then. And I guess that's where the stories begin.
Yeah. I'll jump in real quick. I'll tell and I've told this on the podcast before, but yeah, I think it's an important one to kick things off. But my very first hunt with you guys, first off, I wasn't invited because I wasn't married to my wife yet. You guys were like, nope, it's a family thing. You gotta be in for real. So, okay, fine.
Did we? Really?
I got married. I got married. Yeah, right? So, okay, fine. I got married. If I have to, I got married. Now I can come hunting. And we get out there. We're hunting Central Washington. The first morning we go out, and you guys are going up to the area you call, I think, the Bird's Nest. And you're like, all right, you go with Larry. You guys go to the bear field. And we get out there, and we got our red lights on, and I'm terrified. I have no idea what's going on. And all I know is Larry's like, let's walk all the way across this field. So we just walk from one side to the other. In retrospect, we probably shouldn't have done that. But either way, we walk across the field, sit on this one tree, and I'm sitting there with my muzzle loader. Just as excited as could be, terrified out of my mind, not knowing why I'm doing this, but happy to be part of the family. And next thing I know is I hear something rustling in the bushes. And I look around because Larry was behind me. And it's actually Larry. And he's crawling through the probably knee-high grass on his belly crawling, just taking photos of me. And he's whispering, no, look that way. Look. Like trying to get, like, this is right when the sun comes up, like peak hunting time. And he's just trying to take these majestic photos of me on my first ever hunt. And I'm like, this doesn't feel right, but okay. If this is what Larry's, you know, this is what Larry says hunting is, I'm just going to take these photos with him. What sucks is I actually never saw any of those photos. I just know that for about 15 minutes at first light on my first ever hunting trip, I did a full fledged photo shoot. So that was something I'll never forget. And I really regret not getting those photos from him.
Dude, I totally forgot that we sent you on your first hunt into Bear Field, and that's just the name of the field that we called it. But we're like, yeah, you just go to Bear Field, you'll be fine. Yeah, it's not a big deal. We've seen a lot of bears over there. That's why we called it Bear Field. But you won't run into you. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I definitely heard bears, but I never saw one. So plenty of bear scat around those apple trees. But yeah, I just wanted to kick it off with that story. I don't know if anybody else has one that they want to start with. But I think that's a really important one to me, because I think about it. I think about that story often.
That makes sense. I think that might have been our fourth year or something like that. So Stephen and I had told him to stop taking pictures and leave us alone by then. So I had to pick on you.
He was just happy that I was there.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. Oh, finally, right. Someone to take pictures of.
I'm pretty sure we sent you to Fairfield because it was level. It wasn't much elevation gain, and my dad was going to go with you to teach you his wisdom. Right. Because we've had enough of it, and he wasn't going to walk up to the other spot, so that was the only option.
That's probably more the truth. Actually, here's another funny story. This is actually a fuck you guys story. But I went before that trip. I went to the store. I don't remember the name of the store in Seattle. There, Stephen, I'm sure you do.
Outdoor Emporium,
and I'm like, Larry, I need to get camo because we had to get camo. And I get this sweet suit of camo that I've never been more proud of an outfit in my life. And I think it was like 2 years in hunting in that stupid outfit before you guys, I heard from Larry that you guys have been talking shit behind my back that I look like MC Hammer because my pants were so damn big.
But I thought I looked cool as hell until I learned that you guys thought that. And so then, of course, I hear that you guys are making fun of me from Larry. So I go back to Outdoor Emporium with Larry after he approved the first outfit. I get the next outfit. I don't know what brand that was. Much more snug fitting. Made a lot more sense. I felt better in it. Except that set wasn't waterproof. And hunting in Washington, I remember the first day out was the coldest I've ever been, because my entire outfit was just soaking wet. It absorbed all the water, and it was miserable. So fuck you guys. That's just where I'm throwing that one out.
I'm willing to bet that I got a bad memory, but I'm willing to bet that was completely manufactured by Larry, that he called you MC Hammer Pants and then told you we were making fun of him, because I don't remember that.
Yeah. That's a good possibility.
Just the truth is just now coming out.
Yeah, no, I didn't buy the upgraded gear, the upgraded non-waterproof gear, until the year after we killed our elk. Right, Dylan? I've told that story before. Maybe we'll get to that one later on. But I don't know. Who wants to jump on the spear next and tell the next story?
I could tell some stories, and I was just going to start from the beginning with, like, Larry teaching Dylan and I how to hunt elk. And so, you know, we spent a bunch of time doing just research online, trying to find a good spot. And we kind of went into this area over near Ellensburg, Washington.
Hey, don't burn any spots. Let's...
Yeah, no, not burning the spot. And so we get to our spot, and we had bought this big green, army tent that we were using, and it was super dark in there. So we get in there and set it all up. Larry hates the tent. All he does is talk shit about the tent. And then we go to bed.
Hold on. That's because... The first time we got, it was used. There were bullet holes like bandaged up. This thing is,
yeah, it's an army tent. Yeah, surplus.
Model
armor
of
surplus.
Of efficiency and lightweightness or whatnot. And no. Everything was planned, except, oh, you had to work late. Well, that didn't make sense because we have to set the tent up in the dark. So we'll go out there. And, you know, those tents can go up fine with a handful, say four people that know how to do it. But the first time doing it, my dad did, I guess you and I set it up scouting or whatnot, we had to set that damn thing up and it about killed us. And then you showed up after it was set up. So I think that's where the bitterness started.
And yeah, he's like, this tent's a piece of shit. But anyways, he tells us all these stories about what we're going to do on opening morning, how we're going to hunt. You know, he talks about like that you take like one step every 1 minute. Just slow, and you be so quiet, and you every step you take you stop and you turn and look. And so he's like, and we're gonna get up super early, we're gonna hike to where we want to be, we're gonna get to the best spots, and then we're gonna just sit there for a half hour until it gets light. And so we're all on board. Like, we get up super early, we hike from the tent, and we're hiking up the road, and we get to our spots, which is maybe 20 yards off the road. And like right before it gets light, we just see, or we hear all these trucks pull up to right where we just walked into and get out of their trucks and slam the doors. Like, we just walked a mile to get to this
music.
Place. Yeah. And yeah, just playing loud music, jump out of the truck, slam the door. And then we're both sitting on this field. I'm sitting on one, Dylan's sitting on another. And the sun comes up just enough for us to see. And it looks like we're sitting on a pumpkin patch because there's so many hunters out there with hunter orange on. And we're like, dude, like, this is what hunting's about? This is crazy.
Someone else had this idea.
Yeah. And so we're like, so now, Larry, we're supposed to like take one step every minute and turn and walk really slow. It's like, we ended up, I can't even remember what we ended up doing on that first hunt. We might have just called it and went back to camp, but and came up with a new strategy. But yeah. As well, all that work for opening morning
psyched.
Just to sit on.
We were psyched. Noobs.
How far did you hike in that those guys just drove up?
I feel like it was about at least a mile up the road that we figured, you know, we're not going to drive the truck up there because, you know, that's the hunting area and no one else will drive up there either. But that is not what happened.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. It was like a super rookie mistake on realizing that you got to get off the roads. Yeah, we were psyched on that first trip. We felt like we put a lot of work into it. So it was a bummer when he got nothing. And my dad, all his stories, every year he got one. All maybe two or three of them got an elk. And so we kind of compared ourselves to that first year. I remember that year too. We were because we were so like determined there. At some point in there, like a snowstorm came in and it was just like blowing sideways. And I think we were doing, it was like the evening hunt. And my dad was kind of at my hip. He didn't have a gun though. He always said he was going to grab, get a permit, but he was out of state. And then when it came to spending the money, it's like, ah, I'll just go with you guys. And where am I going to? So he talked himself out of it. But he,
Other than Steven, I think I've been in the woods more with Larry than anyone else. And not once did he ever have a gun with him. He was always just there for the experience. Not once did he have a gun.
Yeah, yep, me too, man.
Of advice. No gun.
Yeah.
But we,
I hunted a lot with Larry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, I probably got 20 days in the woods with Larry hunting and he's never had a gun with him. Maybe a pistol, but.
Yeah, that's true. We were going to hunt, you know, we had a lane to look at, but it's so, like, it's blowing sideways. And at that point, we also weren't real good about the gear we had. But he brought me to this kind of like tree that had a nice big thick branch covered and blocked the wind. And we could have probably stayed the night in there. It was cozy and we're plenty comfortable. But the best part of it was, is we could just see over into like this other field. And there was determined Texas Steven behind the tiniest tree. The tree was smaller than he was, but he was using it for protection. So I was like, we just spent an hour giggling about him like fighting the weather on his own, freezing and no elk coming by. It was great.
Yep. I was just sitting there on the side of this hill getting sleeted on. I didn't want to move because I wanted to wait for it to get dark. And I just sat there for 2 hours, just, you know, thinking, come on, elk, come out. And nothing came out. And I just sat there freezing, shivering.
Right. Like if you're more, these times you think that if I'm more uncomfortable, there's better odds of me seeing something, but it's not really how it works.
Yeah, no. That's the same trip that Larry bumped into that old hunter that told him the 36 long story. Were you there when that old man told that story, Dylan?
But I was in the truck, yeah.
Yeah.
he was, this guy must have been, do you know it? You want to tell it or? I can't remember if
you wasn't
were there
in the
not.
Truck, so I only got the story secondhand. So if you were there, you can tell it better than me.
So this guy's walking, and it's that same snowstorm, right? So my dad and I headed back to the truck. You were out there fighting God and weather for your elk. So we got in the truck, and it's snowing. It's much nicer in the truck. And this dude walks out of the woods by himself. He must have been 65 or something. So like pretty impressive fitness and whatnot. And he's real friendly, so he stops by and chats and goes on and tells us how, you know, his wife has passed years ago and he lives down in Arizona and on, you know, like a retired home and he's happy as hell. It's great. It's loaded full of women because it's usually the men that die first and they're moneyed up and they've got 36 longs, which he's referring to. I won't tell a joke.
Or tits.
Yeah. I think he was telling some story, correct me if I'm wrong, Dylan, but he's like, yeah, when I'm sitting in the hot tub with them, they're just floating on the water. That was 36 longs. And Larry thought that was the funniest goddamn thing he'd ever heard in his whole life.
Yeah, the guy dropped the mic, basically. He walked off into the woods after that comment.
Yeah, awesome. That's right.
That's amazing. I've heard Larry say 36 longs, but I don't think I'd ever heard where that actually came from. I just know that whenever Larry was talking about old lady tits, he always called them 36 longs.
Yep, that's from that story, man, that old man.
Yeah.
That's too funny. That's too funny. Well, I'm going to take a quick pause and from something to away from the stories of Larry to something that I think, I don't know if Larry loved or hated, but Steven, I want you to tell us one of your jokes because Dylan, you said he couldn't and now he has to.
Let's see. I'll tell the,
come up by the grace of God and a sturdy stick.
Yeah, I'll tell that. I'll tell the bear one. Yeah. So these three old boys are out hunting in the woods and they go out to do their hunt and one of them stops and tells the other guys, hey guys, I gotta take a shit. I'll catch up with you later. and he goes and leans up against this tree, and while he's taking a shit, he falls asleep. And his buddies are out there hunting, and when they come back, they had gotten an animal. When they came back, they found him, you know, sitting there passed out up against that tree. So they took the bear's guts and just shoved him up underneath him and went back to camp. And then a little while later, the guy comes running into camp and he says, "Guys, you won't believe what fucking happened. The craziest thing fucking happened. I fell asleep taking a shit and I shit out all my guts. But by the glory of God and the grace of a stick, I shoved it all back in." I would tell Larry that story and he would get so mad. He's like, that joke sucks. Stop telling it.
What's funny is you told it every single hunting camp. And it's like you didn't have a new audience. It was the same people hearing the same joke, but you kept telling it. And that's why it pissed Larry off so much.
Yeah.
Which I think is why it's okay. Important.
It's joke time. You guys want to hear a joke? And Larry would be like, "No, goddamn it, I don't want to hear a joke." I'd be like, "Okay, well, I'm going to tell it anyways."
Yeah, and you always did it while making your chili. And he's like, "That's not fucking chili. It's just a bunch of cans of stuff poured into a pot."
Yeah.
Right. He started lobbying ahead of these events to try to ask me how we could get you to not tell jokes and how we could maybe take away your rights to cook one of the meals because he knew it was going to be chili. But the chili was fine.
Yeah. Dude, Larry just loved to fuck with me, and I loved to fuck with him back. That was the fun of it. Yeah. Like, I told those jokes specifically just to fuck with Larry.
Well, that's awesome. Okay. As long as we're talking about fucking with Larry, I'm going to tell a quick joke. A story. I'm not sure if I've told this one on my podcast already, but Larry would fuck with people, guys. I mean, Steven, you admitted to it. He would like put rocks in people's backpacks. You might hike all day and you'd have a damn like 3-pound, 5-pound rock in your hunting pack. He would do it to his mother-in-law. He would do it to anyone. Dylan, you'll vouch for that. He'll just put a rock in your luggage if you came to visit, right?
Yeah. You gotta watch out for it.
Yeah. So now Dylan does that every time I go visit.
So I knew that was coming. I think this was maybe my second hunt because he did it to me on the first hunt. But I had bought those. I don't know if you guys remember the dirt discs, right? So it's a little canister. Mm-hmm. It had like 5 plastic discs. I don't know how, but they smell like dirt. So I threw them in my hunting bin. So my clothes smelled like dirt. It made enough sense to me. Larry gave me so much shit for having those dirt discs, thinking it was just a ridiculous thing. So I don't know if you guys remember, but I took my dirt discs and I hid them in his luggage, and he didn't have like a hunting bag or a duffel. He had like a carry-on, not a carry-on luggage, but like a full suitcase.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With like the liner
checked luggage. Yeah.
He flew in from Texas to go hunting with us, and he brought his checked luggage with him. So I took 2 of those things. Right. And I put one inside. And then I unzipped the liner and put the other one inside the liner, thinking he'll smell it. He'll immediately remove the one and think that he's won. But he won't know the second one. He won't know about the second one. And he'll just think that first one was so good that his stuff smells like dirt still. And so I put both of those discs in his luggage. And he didn't remove that. And he was going on a road trip, actually. He didn't fly up. He drove up, right? And so he went on a road trip. And he was on his road trip for 3 weeks after our hunting trip. Going, "My stuff still smells like dirt. Those dirt discs are amazing." And I'm like, "Actually, Larry, I'm sorry, man. I open your liner. I put another one in there." So he had been on a road trip visiting his relatives in Canada, visiting people in Colorado, visiting people all over the country. And everything he put on smelled like dirt. For weeks.
He would have had to sell the luggage. That was a good one.
Yeah, it was so goddamn funny.
Yeah, I got a story of him screwing with the Canadian government, actually. So this, like, it wasn't just us. We shouldn't take it personally. But he, you know, I was saying earlier, he wasn't into hunting for trophies. He was hunting for meat. But he did hunt for a trophy once. He got a draw for a Rocky Mountain sheep. In fact, I think you probably have it in the room you're in right now. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right behind me. I've had a lot of people ask about it. Yep. Yeah, it's right behind me.
Yeah. Yep. Was it shoulder mount? Rocky Mountain sheep. Anyway, he got that draw. And I remember he told that story to me a number of times. it was a different type of hunt for him because it's above tree line for one. So like much more athletic trip than others. And I guess they're like pretty easily spooked, pretty much more of a long distance height hunt, shot. He was really into shooting 100 yards or less. I can't remember how far this hunt was with his rifle. But he shot it and came crashing down the mountain and broke through trees and whatnot. And apparently him and his hunting partner had a hell of an event packing it and the meat out of there. Wasn't a big fan of the meat, but he ate it and he got that mounted. But, and you know, there's quite a bit of laws in Canada for hunting regulations. And so you had to take, you actually had to go check in at, I don't know what their equivalent is, the ranger station or the wildlife department, but you had to take the head in there. And the deal was that the horn had to curl around to touch the eye again. I can't remember, a certain amount of degrees or whatever, but it basically comes back down around the eye. Just on one horn, and one horn it did, but the other horn it didn't. And it was a pretty big punishment, apparently, there to deter people from not paying attention to the law and whatnot. And my dad hates authority, hated the government. Maybe the Canadian government most of all, which is why he left that area. And so he walked into that place and kind of played dumb and set the sheep head down on the table, whatever, with the horn that wasn't long enough on one side. And said, hey, just here, you know, to register this this kill that I got. And the guy came out there and he said he could see kind of the excitement on his face. He said, one second, I'll be right back. And went back to get all of his buddies to make a bust. And according to my dad, when they came back out there, once he saw the look on their face, their kind of excitement, he grabbed the head and flipped it over with gusto and slammed it on the table to show that it actually was a legal kill and he got to keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've probably heard that story from Larry 20 times. Every time I talk about, every time I pointed at that sheep, he's like, let me tell you about the time I stuck it to the Canadian government. So yeah, he was very, very, very proud of that. In fact, every time I have the video on and I'm talking to people on this podcast and they see that thing, they're like, oh, why don't you tell me the story of that sheep? And I'm like, well, that's not mine, but I'll tell you about this guy, Larry, who hated the Canadian government.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh man. All right. What else do we got? Dylan, talk about the first elk you killed. Or I think it was the first elk you killed with Larry. I know that's a good one.
Sure. It was, maybe year three or something like that, which started to wear a person out. Started to wear me out. Like, Steven, you got one on the second year. And I don't know. I was feeling a little bummed about not getting anything. But we're in Eastern Washington, and we switched to muzzleloader at this point. Muzzleloader, no sights. We do have a Sabot.
And can we talk about how you guys picked your unit? Because I think it's important.
It's a crazy
story. I think it's important to share how you guys picked your unit for muzzleloader.
Yeah. So we both put in for a cow tag, and we both got drawn. And it turns out that we accidentally put in for different units. They were units that were right next to each other. They
screwed up.
They bordered each other. And so, and we just missed that. One of them's name was, their names were really similar. And so we just kind of missed that. And so what we decided to do was there's the road that ran right down between the two. And we decided we were going to camp right near the road so that you could hunt on one side of the road and I could hunt on the other because we had those tags.
So I've heard this a bunch of times, but I've never asked this question, which is who was actually the person that got the tag in the correct unit and who was the person that got the tag in the wrong one?
Don't even know. I think we were just there. I mean, I don't think we were this is the right one and this is the wrong one. We were just picking a unit and, you know, we picked two different units and we thought we were picking the same one.
Got it.
The one that we ended up killing all the elk that we killed was the one that I chose. But that doesn't mean it was the right one. It just happened to be the one that we found elk in.
Gotcha. All right. Sorry, I interrupted you, Dylan.
We got Spike over the counter. So we had the option in either one. For one was to shoot a cow, one shoot a Spike, and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
We switched to muzzleloader basically because that first story, just to get away from hunters, really wasn't our style. Even if there was a lot of elk and a good harvest statistics, I didn't want my hunt to be affected by other hunters. It kind of ruined the whole vibe of it. And so muzzleloader was interesting to us, which had in Washington a lot less hunters than bow hunting, which I think is, I guess, common in lots of states. But that's how we got into it. It was first year doing that. Of course, you got to be pretty close, of course, open sights and all that. And we're hunting evening hunt. And I don't know, Stephen might have been a couple hundred yards away from me in another field, but just, you know, general same side of the mountain. And we get up there to our spot and pick the best spot we can with the wind and all that. And you sit. And my dad's sitting next to me, and we've got kind of a tree, dead tree, that makes a nice place for me to put my gun on. So we sit, I don't know, I think we actually got up there too early because we're there at least an hour or so. And I hear some snoring, like light snoring. I look over and he's like not even facing the direction where we're hunting anymore because we're going to hunt him. Really, like, did it for a while. It's pretty boring sometimes with a gun, let alone not having a gun. And it's, you got to be quiet. It's not like you can kind of be up there bullshitting with me. So he eventually kind of falls asleep. He's like 4 feet from me. And how old would he be? Maybe 60 years old or something at the time.
Yeah.
Maybe young. Close. Maybe 58 or something like that. And so I'm being diligent, trying to pay attention. It's a field. Still a field. There's a bird. It's a field. And it's getting right to the right. Singing songs in my head and trying to keep attention there. And all of a sudden, it wasn't a field. It was a field with two elk, and one's like 30 yards from me. And I got a bead on it easily. And I thought for a split second, if like, fuck, I'm about to pull a 50 millimeter black powder rifle while my dad is dead asleep like 4 feet from his head. what am I going to do? I can't say, hey buddy, like, there's a short, I know I have like potentially 3 seconds. It walked in the field, it paused the whole broadside for the Dylan to shoot his first elk. It couldn't get better, so I took the shot. Off a little bit, my dad just jumped out of the skin. What is happening? What are you doing? What are you doing? It's like, I shot an elk. It's like, I don't see any fucking elk. It's like, well, it's gone now.
Oh shit. I love that story.
It took him a while to settle down, and then we just kind of whispering because, you know, I'm sure I shot the damn thing. It's like, it would be hard to miss at this distance. And I had perfectly leveled on this log, but on right, can't see in the bush. So we're going to give it a half hour before we go start tracking it. And it was only, I think, 15 minutes and we hear a boom. And I'll turn the story over to you, Stephen, because you're the rest of that story.
Yeah. So I'm sitting in the nest, which is the place that I went to hunt when we left you in Bear Field. And it was the first time I'd ever hunted that spot. It got its name, the nest, because there's like these little trees that you kind of sit and you kind of feel like you're sitting in a nest. Anyways, I hear Dylan's boom and I know it's him because he's the only one up in the general vicinity of me. And it was close. And so I know it was him. And I'm like, awesome. Dylan got something. And then I think it was minutes later because an elk ran directly into my spot and I didn't know what to think. I didn't know, did Dylan miss? And this is the elk that he was shooting at and now it's here. But mine was about 90 yards out and I had to take a standing shot and I shot it from 90 yards out and similar, probably like mine disappeared.
Probably more like 70, so, but that's fine.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Dylan. Anyhow, it goes running off, but I can hear it kind of crashing, so I'm pretty sure it went down. And then, did we have radios? Were we trying? How are we communicating? Or were we? What's that?
I think we did have radios that time. We tried a few different things, but I think we had radios. I sure was confused of why I heard the shot, but so eventually, though, I might have. No, we talked in radios, and then we met up.
Yeah. So we finally end up meeting up, and we realize, I think we even talked about it over the radio, we realized that we shot two elk, that we both shot different elk. And we're like, oh shit, it's dark. We're miles up this hill, and we now have two elk that we need to clean and carry out of here.
And Larry's probably not going to help. And no, I've never cleaned an elk before.
Yeah. Yeah. So pretty much I cleaned two elk. but man, by the time we were done, it was like 1 a.m. just cleaning the two elk.
Just field dressing them. Yeah.
And we're like, dude, I don't think I could carry. I mean, I think we decided to carry what we could carry down. And then we were going to come back up that night.
Yeah.
Right. No. If you remember, when we found that spot, we thought it would be closer if we drove up to the top, because we thought it was closer to the top. And so we drove my truck up to the top and then hiked down to the spot. And then once we got there, we realized that it was way closer to the bottom than it was to the top. And our hunting camp's down at the bottom, or at least down at the bottom, then up a little bit. And so we decide that the best move is for me to hike by myself at 1 a.m. in the dark back up to my truck, which was about 1.5 miles and about 1,500 feet of elevation. So hard hike.
Jeez, with any meat or just by yourself?
Just by myself. Okay. I think I threw, just running on pure fear. And I think I had we probably took the back straps or something. So I had some small amount of meat with me. And so I'm hiking up that mountain, with my pistol in hand, just scared shitless. I think I was singing, Gangsters in Paradise, because I just wanted to make noise so that if there was any bears around, they would run away. And it was the only song that I could think of that I could just sing out loud. And so we get down, I drive the truck around, I pick them up, and then Dylan and I are like, are we about to hike back up there and carry down this elk? And it's like, both of us were like, dude, I couldn't do it if I tried. I don't even think I've got it in me. And so we just decided that we were just going to leave them and wait till morning. And both of us thought that we're going to hike back up there tomorrow, and there's going to be two half elks with just big bites taken out of them.
Meanwhile, Larry's been at the camp since 7 PM, right? Just enjoying himself.
I remember that a little differently. There was a point that I'm certain where, I'm just jacked up on adrenaline and we're going to get this elk out because we've got to save all the meat. And you're right, some animal's going to eat it. And the ad was no fucking way. You two are packing out one elk, let alone two elk right now. And I kind of was super annoyed by that. Just you get annoyed at your dad, no matter what he says, even if he is right. And so I was determined. I think we argued about that while you field dressed him and I pretended to help. I kept determined, we'll just do this. We'll just do this. You're not taking it and nothing's going to eat it. I've done it before. Maybe something will chew on some of the guts. You're going to be fine. And you're right. I swore we really screwed something up, and, nothing happened. They were fine the next day.
Yeah. Hiked back up there. There wasn't even maybe some birds had pecked at them, but that was it.
Well, that's awesome.
And then Dylan and I proceeded to carry two elk all the way down that mountain while Larry, I think he went up there with us the first trip and carried one of the hides back down in his backpack. And then when we got to the bottom and unloaded our, and Dylan and I had two heavy packs. I think we took, we each took a hind quarter on that first trip down, which was, 75 pounds in each of our packs.
Yeah. And then these were thinking, that's how heavy it was.
Yeah. And we get down to the bottom, and then, all right, we're like, all right, let's go back up. And Larry's like, no, you guys go ahead. I'm just going to hang down here. So me and Dylan went up. What's crazy is we only went up two more times. We were able to get two elk down that mountain in three trips, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I think the last trip down, Dylan, I think we both had a hind quarter and a front quarter.
Oof.
which is
there's either that or do another trip up for a lighter weight, and we just kind of like took a lot of breaks.
Yeah,
it was silly.
Yeah, it's like the backpacks we were, you know, the felt like the arms of the backpacks were just gonna rip off because they were so much weight off. But yeah, that was the two elk story. That was a rad trip.
That was a good one.
I love hearing the when you fired Dylan and scared the shit out of Larry.
What a thing to do, person. You know, we should actually, we're almost gonna like up and edit. We forgot that, like, with his early stories, as he's kind of like rearing us as elk hunters, he talked pretty highly of his hunts up there in Canada, and that he was referred to as the Great White Hunter. And he would remind us that that's Ed's nickname. Never mind you, he never bought a gun hunting because he didn't want to pay the extra fee of the state fees. But he would ask for respect and maybe to be referred to as the Great White Hunter.
He
certainly did. And I think Steven, you tried to claim it one time because you actually shot an elk with your bow, and he's like, nope, didn't count. I'm still the Great White Hunter.
Yes. Like, I'm the only one. No one else gets to be that.
Well, we had that time. This one's so silly. I haven't run into, maybe Michael, now that you're so avid in the hunting stories and hunting and whatnot, but, and I think, yeah, you were quite with us on these hunting trips yet, but we were hunting once, and it might have been like our second year or something before we had like moved to muzzleloader, and it's a war zone. It's like, here's like a ton of damn shots. You're almost making like a strategy of, well, maybe those hunters will chase them off the mountain over there. It's just too many hunters out there. And we don't see anything, and we don't get anything, and it's like 10 a.m., you know, so there's sort of a question of, well, maybe I'll do a sort of slow walk back to camp, take a nap, and then prep for the evening hunt. And I get a radio from him. I don't know. He's off by himself with a camera or scouting for us. I don't know exactly what he's doing. He's like, hey, you need to come over here. I'm like, what's up? Where? Like, where's over here? Kind of grumpy because I didn't get anything in the morning. And so he tells me, and it takes a bit to navigate. We didn't have like good GPS or anything like that. And it's like, I'm back here in these, he went off and walked out into the open so I could see him, but went quite a bit out of my way, and he wouldn't tell me what's up. He's like, come here, trust me, you just need to come here. And he walks back into like thick bush. Like, I don't know why he got in there. I found out later he just, I think, got kind of lost and ended up in some thick bush. And he walks up, and there's a dead elk on the ground with like three or four bullet holes in it. Like, you know, and I had heard people with semi-automatics earlier. I just like hated this place and people like not taking clean shots and so many hunters or whatnot. And I looked down and I'm like, what's going on? They're like, well, it's a dead elk. And I'm like, yeah, it's not our elk. I mean, did anyone come around? It's like, nope. I'm just going to let the quiet kind of sit there for a while. I'm like, okay, well, let's go back to camp. I don't know how to find a hunter to find his elk, and it's not my fucking elk. It's like, yeah, you know what, though? No one's going to find this elk. So we go back and forth like this for a while. And it's like, tell you what, you try to find the blood trail from this thing in these thick woods.
I've been here. I'm going to stop you for a second. So this is the trip, just Michael, that that Brian was on. It's the only time Brian ever came hunting with us. And Brian is Dylan's other brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And so Brian's there. It's me. I think it's just the four of us. Maybe Daniel, my brother, was there too. I can't remember. But so we're all four of us just standing around this elk, just trying to decide what to do. Continue.
We go through the same thing. Eventually, I'm just like, he convinced me. He's like, look, before I called you, the shots had stopped for an hour. And then you got here an hour later. So it's been 2 hours.
Yep.
No one's going to find this elk here. So he's like, we don't have to tag it, but it's going to rot in these woods. And I go back with the moral sort of story of it for a while, but I start to kind of come around and I'm like, shit, maybe we shouldn't let it waste. And then Steven comes up and you had to go through the same exact, like,
yep.
Fuck this. There's no goddamn way I'm going to tag. This is not my elk.
Yep. Yeah. And dude, we did.
Thing.
we did exactly like Dylan said. We kind of all walked around in a circle, larger growing circles, to see if we could even find a blood trail so that then we could try to backtrack it back towards where the hunters were. And we couldn't find a single drop of blood within like 50 yards of that elk.
That's crazy.
Yeah, another hour went by. And so eventually one of us, maybe reluctantly put a tag on that elk, and Steven reluctantly started cleaning it for
him. Good job, Steven. Elk number three.
Yeah.
You know, it just was different. You know, usually when we shoot an elk, there's sort of a feeling of sort of respect for the elk and then a celebration for ourselves. This was just kind of awkward and quiet. And it wasn't, I don't know if we even drank whiskey back in camp that night.
Yeah,
we just all felt a little weird.
Yeah, we were all just moping around. We were moping around while we were cleaning it. We were moping around while we were loading in the truck. We just kept looking around. It's like, if another hunter comes and says this is his elk, we're going to give it to him because it's, you know, it's not ours. And it's like, we took our time just in case someone came by and just nothing.
Yep.
And like, we got back to camp and I think we're like cooking the heart and just like sitting there weirdly looking at each other.
I think it was later that trip that my dad's nickname changed from, and you coined him, Stephen, from the Great White Hunter to
the Great White Finder. Oh man, he hated that. Goddamn.
Yes, he did.
Like, that was too good. Stuck for years.
Oh man, that's too funny.
Oh shit.
Go ahead, Dylan. No, go ahead.
Just thinking about, like, do you guys remember? We also had, he repeatedly brought up innovations in hunting, like elk hunting inventions that they're bad ideas. And he would bring them up and we would have to go through these ideas each time. Like, one was, could you train an elk to be your pet and ride it in the woods? You wouldn't have to hike up all these mountains. They could haul it out like a horse. And he'd go as far as like, well, I suppose you'd have to put Hunter Orange on it or you might get shot. And like, he would take it to further details like that. It's not the concept that needs it further discussion. or he had another one. It's like, what we need, he's like, you know, maybe this is a dumb idea of us walking quietly through the woods. I mean, sometimes the elk are quiet, but sometimes they're noisy as all hell. You think they're all scaring each other through the woods? Maybe it's our shoes. What we need is elk hoof shoes, so we'll sound like an elk.
That's right. Oh shit, it's hilarious.
That's too funny.
Yeah,
that sounds like Larry. And then for the listeners, Larry was how would you guys put it? He built things for a living, right? He had ideas.
He's an inventor type.
Some of them were great ideas, but none of them while in the elk woods, it sounds like.
No. Yeah. All bad ideas in the elk woods.
That's too funny. I've told this story on the podcast, which is actually Dylan's first bull, right? And I'd like you guys to tell that story because, Steven, you and I were together, and then Dylan, you and Larry were together. So I think that would be a fun story to tell outside of my perspective.
Yeah, it's kind of fun how it joins up, I guess. I mean, it was a hunt of a lifetime for me. Again, Eastern Washington, muzzleloader, my dad was there. We got organized enough to do a group bull permit and got drawn, so all three of us were drawn, right, in a pretty good unit.
Yep.
And so we decided we were going to hunt 10 days, I think, around the whole season, basically, if that's what it took. And the first night we got out there, they were bugling all night, which I don't think any all of us night, really had that much experience with that. I had never really heard like a bugle here or there, but like heard bugling and like really being in a rut. It was awesome.
I'm gonna interrupt real quick because that first night, I remember waking up that next morning to go into the woods and everyone's like, how'd you sleep? And I'm like, they were bugling all night. I couldn't sleep a wink. And both of you were like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, I was the only person that was up all night hearing bugling literally all night long. And neither one of you, both of you just slept right through it. But yeah, they bugled all night long. That was the craziest thing I'd ever experienced.
Yeah, that's true. I think maybe I went to the bathroom once, but other than that, it's you that told me to bugled all night. I slept soundly.
I slept not at all because Larry snored so bad, which we can go into how we fixed that problem at some point, but let's keep going.
So pretty excited about our prospects on opening day, and went up to a spot that we had kind of seen a confluence of trails, and I don't know. We've been hunting 8 years at this point, and you know, not killing it every year, like not getting an elk every year by a long shot. So first feeling like a B12 shot and excitement for hunting, but morning goes, no elk, no elk comes by. That's fine. We've got lots of time. And so it's kind of a newish part of the GMU. So I drag my dad along and we walk up some area, and I can hear the bugling in the distance. It's quite a bit of ways away. And so we walk, just kind of hunting one valley to the next. Goodness, don't feel like heading back to camp, even though it's getting to be towards midday by now. So usually
I feel like it was like 10 in the morning. So it was the morning hunt was kind of over, but it wasn't quite time to go back to camp yet. It wasn't lunchtime.
Yeah.
Well Stephen, you and I had gone back to camp. You and I had breakfast.
We did, but we had kind of gone back. Yeah, we'd kind of gone bastard. Back out.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We did.
You heard bugling too, so you kind of, it's hard to stay at camp when they have that happen. And I'm not getting close. My dad and I aren't getting closer to them. They're kind of heading off, as far as I can tell, at the same pace as me, maybe faster. And I say to my dad, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but I want to see if I can catch them. Like, maybe there's enough of them. I want to get as close as I can. I don't have preconceived notions of loudly sneaking up on a bunch of elk, but it's either that or go back to camp. So, and he's too slow. And so I'm kind of dancing around. It's like, you know what? I'll stay right here. And so I set him up with food and water, had a kind of half-assed conversation about navigation and how he could get back to camp. I'm not sure he could have. I'm glad the weather was good enough.
No chance.
And so I left him there. And I put my rifle over my back and I just hit out on a jog to like at least get closer. And I'm digging on them. I can tell that it's getting louder. There's still a ways away. But I can tell they're up on a ridge now. I'm like, shit, 500 feet up this ridge. Okay. And so I start hiking up there and I pause and I look and there's two cows at the top looking at me. It's pretty exciting. I'm like, oh shit, I'm real close. They sound far away, but maybe they're over the ridge. So they go run off and I book it up to the top of the ridge. And now I'm starting to get the feeling of like, should I be going quietly? Because I'm going to spook the whole thing and ruin it and go run 20 miles off. Yeah. On the other hand, they're moving. So it's like, maybe it's all or nothing. And I've heard stories of like when they're in ruts, maybe they could give a shit about you, right? You could just sneak up on them. So I decide to book it. So I move in and I spook a bull off maybe 50 yards to my left. I'm like, God damn it. I fucked it up. I could have gone slower and got to it. But anyway, I keep going, and now I'm coming down a ridge, and I'm pretty close enough to determine there's at least two bulls bugling. There might be three, and then I hear them hitting downhill. And so at one point, I was running down a hill, jump. This is not like the door. I'm not advising anyone to elk hunt like this, even believe me. I can't imagine doing it again, but I'm trying to get closer. And so I'm running down a hill, like leaping down a hill. And I pause and I see them coming down like a freight train, just like dust and bushes and whatnot. And they're maybe 100, 200 yards from me. I'm like, oh man, I'm so close, but it's really thick brush. So stopping doesn't make sense. And man, my heart was really beating during that. It was a really like primal feeling. So then I head crossways to where they're at. They're kind of staying more still. I'm getting real close to the point where I can smell them. And I'm wondering, like, I don't even see, like, 10 fucking yards. But, like, how close can I get these things? I'm going to need a what do you call it when you have a knife on the end of your rifle?
The bayonet.
Yeah, I need a bayonet here if I get it. And right by then, I heard a bugle that was way closer than I thought. And then one, that pissed off one uphill. And they came down with its harem. Crashing through it. I actually had a thought there for a second of like getting run over by them, but I can now see the dust. But I can't see them, and they're just on the other side there. And so I decide, okay, I'm going to kneel here. I can see maybe 20 yards in this one lane. It's about as good as it's going to get back here. I'm just going to be still for a bit. Maybe they'll come up my way. And I don't know, maybe I did it for 10 minutes or something like that. And this huge dam, 6x6, tromps right up, broadside, 20 yards from him, and I shoot him right in the heart. It was nothing, like from a kneeling stance. It was easy shot right there, and it runs off. And I just sit down to let it do its thing. But maybe like a minute later, I hear across the valley, not too far, too close, frankly, kaboom, another shot. And I'll turn it over to one of you guys to finish the rest of the story.
Well, let's take a quick pause. So you left Larry sitting on a stump. Do you guys remember the videos that Larry took sitting on that stump? Remember, he never has a gun. Never has a gun with him. But what was in those videos?
What's the deal? Oh, elk.
It was herds of elk. He had a video of like 50 elk running at like 40 yards from him.
I've actually got him in front of me right now. I'm looking at him right now.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just like, oh, look at that. And he's just like literally just pointing his phone, taking his videos, sitting there, not doing a thing. Just as
it's one with a rock. No problem. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so funny. You just left him there. And then also where you guys were earlier in that morning, we had a game camera and the biggest elk, even bigger than the one that you shot, walked by that game camera about an hour after you left it. So it just happened to be a surplus of elk that particular morning.
Yeah. And there's one of the pictures of that elk is bugling. So he was one of the ones going into that fight that Dylan just happened to be in the middle of.
Yep. And I saw that elk at some point. But Stephen, why don't you start your story from the beginning of the morning, and then maybe we'll meet up when Dylan fires.
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, like when Dylan told me that story of him running through the woods with his muzzleloader in his hand, I always picture Daniel Day-Lewis at the beginning of...
Don't give him that. Don't give him that's that. How I think he's already got too. A song.
Yeah, dude, for sure, man. Just running through the woods and all of a sudden stops and shoots an elk as it's running. That's the picture I have in my head. So we're hunting, and I think Michael and I are hunting on the other side of the road from where Dylan is, kind of back in this brush. And like Michael said, we went back to camp, but we'd already hunted. We kind of walked back to camp. We went and grabbed some apples, and we were going to go spread them around in this other area that we wanted to hunt. It was called the bog. And there just happened to be like a boggy area up on the other side of the hill. And so we're up in there with some apples that we had, and we're like just playing kind of baseball with them. Like you'd pitch one up in the air and I would smash it with a stick. And we're hearing these bugles.
Like an applesauce,
and
the
bugles sound, they're bad bugles. And so we're like, those hunters, they suck. They just keep talking back and forth to each other. And we're sitting there thinking is like, these guys are sitting here bugling at each other. They're not even like, neither one of those is an elk.
Never mind. This is October, right? So like, it's not huge bugling. September is. October is not huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're just sitting there talking those stories and then hitting apples with bats. And then all of a sudden, one of the bugles was a good, good bugle. And I was like, dude, I don't know a person that can make a bugle that good. That was an elk. And so we both kind of just like jump up and grab all our shit and start running towards that bugle.
And I think we each had like 20 pounds of apples in our backpacks too at that
point. And we're running. And we get to where we can see the other slope, which is where that bugles are coming from. And we glass and we see this bull that's bugling. He's got mud all over the side of him and he's running right towards where we're hearing the other bugles. So we're like, holy shit, there's like a big bullfight about to happen. And so we're just tearing ass, running down the slope that we're on to get to the road so that we can run up the other slope. And similarly, like, I think you had a, didn't you have a knee problem, Michael?
It was like my first time doing anything after an Achilles rupture and having surgery.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so when we get to the road, I'm like, he's like, dude, I don't think I can run up that hill.
No, okay. So I'm going to give myself credit. I made it about 100 feet up that hill and was like, nope.
Okay.
I tried. Okay. Give me a little bit of credit even. Okay.
Yeah. So you tried, but at some point you holler at me and you're like, I can't run anymore up that hill. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to keep going. And you just go and walk, like just skirt the hill or walk straight sideways. So you're not having to run up it. And so I had run. And I ran almost to where Dylan was, because when I heard the shot, I was at full run and it sounded like it was 20 feet away from me. And I hear just this blasting of elk running through the woods. And I know what it is because I'm so close. And so I'm like, one of them is absolutely going to run by me. All I've got to do is stand right here and I'll get a shot. And it turns out like they ran in every direction except the direction that I was from them. Like nothing came by me. I'm just sitting there in the woods by myself with like 50 yard shots all around me. And there's 40 elk in the woods and none of them go by me. I'll turn it over to Michael to tell his part of the story. And then I'll tell another part.
Yeah. So here I am in my MC Hammer pants running down the road, right? Cause I can't go uphill. Just the slope killed me. And I'm just jogging. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, these guys didn't teach me shit. The only thing you guys told me was if I shoot my muzzleloader, first thing I should do is reload it. So I'm running, I'm running. And then I hear boom. And next thing I know, there's an elk standing on the road in front of me at like 100 yards. So I pull my muzzleloader up. I'm breathing heavy. And I look down the sight, you know, open sights, right? Iron sights. And all I see is an elk with a Davis tent, like a big wall tent directly behind it. And I'm like, I can't take that shot. I was like, I don't know if somebody's sleeping in. I don't know what's going on, but I can't shoot this shot. And that was the bull, Dylan, the huge one on the camera that we had, the bigger of the bulls. I mean, he was at least a 6x6. I don't know, but he was bigger than the one that we killed. And he just looks at me, stops for a second or two. And I'm like, what am I going to do about this? I can't do anything about it. And he runs off. So I run, you know, the 50, man, 70, 80, 80 yards down that road to where he was. And I look into the brush to where he ran in across that road that I was running down. And I hear something behind me. So I turn around and God damn it. There's another bull right there. So I'm like, okay, it's uphill. It's about 60 yards. I pull my muzzle loader up. He's just standing there and I take that shot. And that's the second shot, Dylan, that I think that you heard, right? And so I think the next thing that I remember is dropping. I have a little container to keep all my black powder dry. I open that up and I drop everything. So I'm like digging through the grass, trying to find my black powder, trying to find my sabots. And I'm just like panicked. Don't know what's going on. I just shot at an elk. And this is like my second year, I think. You guys were angry at me because we do this tag on my second year. And a truck drives by. I'm literally in the ditch on the side of the road trying to find sabots and gunpowder. They were maybe 30 seconds away when I fired, and they just drove by. Didn't ask any questions. They did drove by while I'm like, yeah, nothing. Just while I'm scrambling in the ditch next to the road trying to get all this shit. And so I don't know what to do. So I just run straight to where I shot it. And that's when I think I hear you, Dylan, holler. And so I'll throw the story back to you.
Yeah. I can't quite remember when it is. It's kind of confusing because you shot an elk, and I believe you, and I certainly shot an elk. And I know the elk is, I don't know, 50 yards from us. It's laying down now. It's dying. It's taking its like last breaths. So you and I sat there for a bit. It's kind of an interesting moment to share.
I'm going to take us back just a second, man. Sorry. I remember this is something that I remember very clearly is you yelling, "Who's shooting?" And I hear your voice and I go, "Dylan, I shot an elk." And we're just screaming in the woods because that's what you should do immediately after killing an elk, right? Is just screaming at each other. So you yell, "Who's shooting?" I yell, "I'm shooting Dylan," because I can hear your voice. I know it's you. And I'm like, "Ah, I shot an elk." And then you go, "I shot an elk." And then you go, I have no idea where mine is. And I'm like, I'm standing where I shot mine. Come to me. And so eventually we end up finding each other. But we're just like completely, neither one of us has a clue what's going on. And we're sitting there talking to each other. Go ahead.
Right. I remember that. I think I got a little spooky. We don't wear hunter orange in muzzleloader. And it just was so close. And I'm scared of idiot hunters. So I was like, didn't know it was you or whatnot. That's right. I remember that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, we came to each other and we're trying to sort out what happened, right? But we know, I think at that point, we found the elk. We know it's dying off.
Yeah, yeah. So we're standing there talking and I'm like, I shot it right here. This is what it was standing on this game trail. And then you look down the game trail, what, I don't know, 60 yards, and it's standing there. Just standing there.
Yeah.
And we're like, what do we do? And you're like, I need to go get Larry. I left him in the woods.
I don't know how long it's been. I don't know how far away I am.
That's like all you can think about. Is like where I'm looking at this elk. It's still on its feet. And you're like, oh, shit.
So I went
how long ago
him,
did I leave Larry?
And, he was like, I didn't stay there till it died. I went and got Larry before.
Before it died. Yeah, you were like, you stay with this thing. Wow. I'm going to go get Larry.
Right. I remember sitting with you for a bit and having a conversation around like it dying. And I was just both kind of acknowledging like, man, hunting, you know, we need to eat meat. It didn't want to die. This is just sort of the reality of the thing, and had a little respectful moment of it. And then that's right. I remember it's like, I better get my dad. So I did find him, stay put, showed me his pictures. He was like really excited to show it to me because he's thinking, what an idiot, running off in the woods and the goddamn elk right here. So he's pretty excited to hear when we got something. But then we got up to the elk. And it's got two bullet holes in it because you and I shot the same damn elk.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we did. Which I've learned since that moment.
Pretty awkward.
In the state of Washington, technically that's my elk. I know that you got the rack, but in the state of Washington, or not, and Oregon, I believe. It's the last shot. If it's still on its feet, last shot. In fact, some hunters follow hunters. I was talking to Cody Rich. He's a big hunter out of Oregon, and he's actually had this experience like three different times where him or a buddy shot an elk and then somebody else shot it afterwards. And the legality of it is this last hunter to shoot it while it's still alive gets the elk. So I'm just saying.
I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? Because what if the shots were like identical? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You have to have something to pick it. Well, I'm going to remember that next time I go hunting with you guys. I'm going to just, if I hear you make a shot, I'm just going to find that elk and shoot it right before it dies.
There you go.
And I'm glad you didn't look it up because you and I sat there and negotiated for a while. I think we logged it out that my shot was in the heart and yours was a little off the heart. And
mine was lungs and spine and yours was heart. Yeah. They were both kill shots, but yours, you didn't need mine. That's for sure.
I didn't need yours. That's how we launched it up. Or either that or we used like kindergarten rules, which is like, I saw it first.
But
we shared the meat.
Right? Yeah.
But not, this was a trophy. So that's, you know, if it was sharing the meat, there wouldn't have been any real issue, but someone gets the antlers from this beautiful beast. So
right.
It was an awkward discussion.
That's right. And this is also the first elk that Steven didn't fully clean. Because while you were gone, I was like, Steven, I feel like I should start this thing. And so I started it. And then Dylan, when you got there, you finished it. So Steven was still majority of it, probably 51%. But the rest, we did some work on this particular elk.
Yeah,
we did. We did some work on it, and remember, there's another one which we don't need to go in the story. That the trick is, if you get sick of cleaning the elk, just like feign ignorance for a bit, and Steven can't stand it because he cleans them so fast. He just gets in there. It's like, I don't. How do you do it, Steven?
Yeah,
you guys tricked me into that a bunch.
Well, I think I guess the biggest thing to me was I didn't start near camp. I chased this elk all over the damn hills, and there sure are a lot of stories of like then the elk's way back there and you gotta pack it out. These things, they ended up somehow on the same hillside, but maybe 400 yards from our tent.
On
a hillside on slippery grass, and this is a big animal. I don't know, what do you think that thing weighed?
700 800
pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. 700, 800.
We took that thing and you walked back and drove my truck, or maybe your truck, Stephen.
No, it was Larry. At that point, you had been back with Larry. He walked to get the truck because we were about a mile down the road and drove it up. And while Larry was getting the truck, remember that tent that I almost didn't, well, I didn't shoot, but had the shot at? Those boys came back for midday and they were hollering at us. Remember, they were like, what are you boys doing up there? And we're like, we shot an elk.
I'm looking at it right now.
They're like, you guys shot an elk next to our camp? And I'm like, you guys have no idea. An elk ran through your camp.
Right. Drove them nuts. They've been hunting all day. It's like, it's right outside there. Well, that elk would have been a lot of work to pack out and we would have left a lot of meat there. But we slid that thing we actually had to slow it down, sliding down the hill. And it slid right into the back of the truck with no effort. I think it hit the cab just a little bit.
I think there were six of us because those guys came up and helped, right? So the six of us slowly slid that thing right into the truck bed.
The slope of the hill just happened to be the perfect slope that when you back the truck up to the hill, the tailgate just bumped the hill. Mm-hmm. So it just slid right down in there.
Remember Larry being in the truck while we were doing that, being like, good job, boys. This is how hunting's done. Just he wrote the script to what just happened.
Yeah.
That's right. These photos in the cabin raw. I forgot I had them really high resolution. But we hung that elk up whole in camp on day one. We actually had to, I think, Stephen, you had to re-rig things because the head was on the dirt, but it was a pretty prominent spot, so we got a lot of looky-loos coming by and looking at it for a while.
Yeah,
and that was the first day of our 10-day hunt.
But
we didn't see another elk the rest of the time.
That's right, but we did see a beehive. You want to tell that story?
Holy shit.
Was that same trip? What a weird thing that happened in one trip.
It was the same trip, yep.
So I got drunk that night and slept in and let the guys home. But after that,
we all did.
Yeah, I guess maybe we all did. After that, I helped, scout and whatnot and take some pictures and whatnot. So I came out, at least in the afternoon hunts, and we had some cameras around and I had put this one up. And I remember thinking when I put it up and I'm the tallest and I reached up high and I remember thinking, ooh, bee. Oh, weird. And then that's it. Well, it's time to go retrieve the camera. And now maybe it's warmer out than when I put it up. But the roots of this tree are a wasp hive. And the thing, it's not like there's no easy release. You got to undo straps on this thing. So we kind of see what we're up against. I put it up there. I think that's how we decided I had to take it down.
No, so I think what was happening is we went over there to get it, and I don't remember if it was you that started to get it down or if it was me, but we start getting it down, and then all of a sudden, I get stung by a bee, and then your dad gets stung by a bee. And then we kind of run out of there, and we realize, there's some bees flying around that very specific thing. And we were like, well, I've been stung already. Larry's been stung already. Dylan, you got to go get it because you haven't been stung yet.
Oh my God. That's how it went. I took it raw. So I go get it. And I might have stepped on the root or whatever.
It was like a log. It was a log that you stepped on, and the log
grew up underneath you. Right. I'm trying to get it off, but I'm getting bit. I'm getting stung a couple times. I'm working fast, but I end up. They're coming. I can hear them. And I forget about the camera and I run away and swat at them. And I've never had an experience like that. Like they were attacking me. So I start running through the woods. I can run pretty fast. And then I'm running downhill. Then I'm running downhill, like jumping over logs, making pretty big bets on my agility to get over these things. And they are stinging me like I'm standing still. And I ended up, I think I screamed at one point. Actually getting pretty afraid. It was kind of a primal feeling. And I had this little voice, this little realization. If there was a cliff, I would jump off of it. and I had the realization and I sat down. I was like, well, we're not going to get to that point. So I just sat there and swat him with my sweater and whatnot, and they stung the shit out of me until they were satisfied or dead. I don't know.
Is that what happened? I was actually not there. This is like the 2 days that I went back to town. All I remember is Larry had the whole thing on video. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. He thought it was funny too soon. I guess it was pretty funny for everybody else but me.
It was the funniest video I've ever seen, because it's like you for 2 seconds and then it's just woods. You don't see anything, but you hear you screaming. And that is all that video was just a picture of the woods and you screaming.
Yeah, and Larry and I are laughing, and then the more Dylan screams, we're like, we were laughing for a while, and then all of a sudden we realize it's not actually funny. He's getting really fucked up by those bees, and then like we didn't know what could we have done, right? Like we're trying to figure out like what do we do?
Slapping me in the face, yeah. What we're gonna do?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. They sure owned me. My eye sealed shut in an hour or so. My face, the pictures looked like I lost a UFC fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Thought about going to the hospital. Just like, I don't know, can something happen if I get stung that much? And for about a couple of years, if I heard like a house fly, you know, if there's a fly in my truck, I damn near drive off the road. I was so scared of anything that buzzed after that.
Yeah. Understandably, that was crazy.
Oh man! And then you never got the camera down, so we still had to get it down, right?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, then we dressed you up. Somehow you lost the bet.
Well, so I still have photos of this, and I'll put this on my Instagram. But like, we were like, how do we get back here? And so you guys went to town, and I don't know if you remember this, Steven, feel free to take over. But you bought Tupperware and a bug bomb.
We had the Tupperware, and we bought a bug bomb, and we duct taped the bug bomb. And then, so I drew the short straw of like putting the bug bomb over the log. And so the idea was I put on every bit of clothing that I had, like jackets on, I put gloves on and duct taped the sleeves so that my hands are in there. And if you guys remember, we had this like plastic salad thing that came in like a
kale
salad team. It was kale chips. We're in this little plastic square tub.
Kale chips, yeah. Cheddar flavored kale chips.
Yeah. And so we poked holes in it, not big enough for bees to go into, and then duct taped that to the hoodie of my jacket so that like I could see through it. And this was our idea, right? Like I'm bee proof and I'm gonna walk in there. And so I go to do this, and I'm fucking hyperventilating in this thing because I can't breathe worth a shit.
And it's fogging up.
So I can't see either. And so I'm walking in there to like set this. And I do it. I go over there and I set this bug bomb Tupperware over the top of the log so that it's like spraying it down in there. And this is going to work. It's going to kill all the bees. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I get and that. At the same didn't get stung.
Go ahead.
No. That was the end of mine. I think I walked over to you and you started helping me get out of my.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same time, Dylan, you're not willing to leave camp. You're like, fuck that. No, I'm not going anywhere near
that camera particular hill. Lost forever.
Yeah. You're like, figure it out or leave it. I don't care. I'm not going anywhere near there. But we come back the next day, Steven, with a BB gun, right? Yeah. And we start shooting the Tupperware thinking maybe
all of them, huh?
Well, no, we're just like, hey, if they're alive, if we shoot the BB gun, it'll fire them up and they'll start floating. So one of us, like we're 30 yards, right? One of us has binos and the other one's shooting the Tupperware with the BB gun, trying to see if the bees exist still or not. And they fucking do. And so now we've got a pissed off hive of bees again. We're like, well, shit, what do we do? So we go back to camp and the next day is our last day. And we're like, oh, we have to get it before we leave. And I think the logic was like, Dylan, you just refused to do anything involving that hill, which made enough sense.
Yeah.
Larry, I don't think Larry was still in camp. I think Larry's like, Dylan, my son got a bull elk. I'm going back to drink wine at home. Steven's like, I'm not tall enough to reach it. I'm pretty sure you were tall enough to reach it, Steven. You just didn't want to do it.
Yep, exactly.
And so you sent me in. So I'm in that same thing, right? I mean, both of us are duct taped gloves, duct taped to our hoodies. necks, waists, you know, ankles, everything duct taped. I don't think I went with, I might have had like a pair of like shooting goggles that I threw on over my eyes, but I walked in there and first thing in the morning when it was still cold and just basically unzipped it and walked off. No harm, no foul. Thank God. But because I wasn't even there when you boys did that. So I felt pretty, I don't know, pretty screwed over having to undo it.
Did it. Saved the day.
I don't know about that. Did you have that video of that Larry took of you running through the woods or no?
You know, I bet my mom does somewhere. I don't think if he sent it to me, I'd probably delete it. And I was bitter for a little while.
I bet. Yeah. yeah, that's one of my favorites. So I just remember Larry showing everybody that when he came back to Seattle to shit during the little break.
Yeah.
One took. Yeah. Well, what other stories you guys have? That was a fun trip. All that happened in one crazy trip. What else do you have? Anything else that you want to share about Larry?
Well, I've got a story. It was a couple years before that, but in that same area. We're maybe like 100 yards further up the road from there. And it was just me, Dylan, and Larry. And this one year, we were back in there hunting, and it was so effing cold. It was, I mean, like it was well below zero, and we didn't go out there prepared for that. And, you know, we have the big tent that has a potbelly stove in it, but it's a burn ban year, so we can't have a fire. And it's by far the coldest year we ever had, and it was the only year that we couldn't have a fire. And so what we decided to do is we decided to go into town and get, like, see if we can find some stuff to keep us warm. And so because all we have is our sleeping bags, and they're good sleeping bags, but they just weren't good enough for that weather. And so we go to this thrift store, and we all buy, like, we buy them out of old blankets. So we go back to camp, and then I bought a little heater, like a little propane heater, but it wasn't powerful enough to heat the whole tent. It would only kind of heat up my area. And so Larry kept trying to steal it from me. So we're all bundled up. When we go to bed, we're all in our sleeping bags with like five or six blankets that we bought at this thrift store over each of us, all still freezing, all just kind of like miserable all through the night. Except me, I've got this little heater buddy that's like heating up just my general vicinity. I just remember that, like, Larry complaining the whole time that we were out there and it was that cold. And snoring the whole time, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tie
it. I always wake up and say, did I snore?
Yes, man. Yeah. I snore every time. What? Why are you asking the question? Yeah.
Do you guys remember when we figured out how to stop him from snoring?
No.
No.
No. Okay, well, one year somebody brought a joint. In Washington at this point, marijuana was legal, and we brought it. And Larry smoked a bunch of it, and that night he didn't snore. And so from that point forward, we made him smoke every night
before he went to bed.
Like, well, that's hilarious.
He didn't have to like smoke a lot. He just took one puff before he laid down, and for whatever reason, that was enough to stop his snoring. And we all slept better every night from that one night on.
Yeah, and he'd be like, I don't even want to smoke. And we'd be like, you're fucking smoking, Larry. We're going to make you smoke this. So to
speak. Take this joint.
Like, I don't want to be high right now. It's like, smoke it anyways.
Oh, man, that was too funny.
I forgot.
That's awesome.
Good.
Oh, man.
I've got a funny story about Larry in the grocery store.
Okay.
This isn't one story. This is every time we went to the grocery store. But he would just be walking through the grocery store with us, and like he had no idea what to do. It's like he'd never been to a grocery store before. And like he'd just be kind of like waddling around behind Dylan and or like just wandering off, and would be like, Larry, go get some coffee. And he'd go get like – he'd come back with like
a 12 pack
enough coffee for one day. And we'd be like, dude – what are you doing? Like, get enough coffee. You'd be like, oh, what do you mean? And like, go get us some chips. And he'd come back with like one bag of chips, like for himself. He'd be like, Larry, come on, man. Like, you're not helping.
Gone a half hour.
Yeah. Oh, man. Every time we went hunting, me and Dylan would have to do all the shopping, and then we'd have to find Larry at the end.
That's too funny.
You started out as like our like mentor and super helpful. I don't know what we've done without him. And then he just got progressively less useful. But over time, till his name was the Great White Finder. But man, he was always at his best, I think, hunting. Like he was his funniest. Oh. And you could tell that the stresses melted away. He was at his happiest on the hunting trip for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So glad to have had him at all of them too, man. Every time. It was such a blast.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I remember the first year he wasn't there with me, and it was a totally different experience. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's what hunting stories are about, right? Just remembering the best of times. So.
Hell yeah.
You guys have any more stories, or are we going to call it here? I mean, you guys tell me.
I think that's about it. You know, there were some stories he told from his hunting days on repeat, and I like loosely remember them, but like I'll share another short. I'll share them and see if you want them. You know, he talked about being disciplined and up early, and like Steven said, like walk in the dark a long ways, be in the dark for a while by yourself, stay away from other hunters. But one time they just drank too much and screwed opening day. It's like, and they woke up hungover and just felt like ashamed, just like shit, like what are we doing? This, if we get drunk any night, god damn it, well let's head out there, because they didn't, I guess they weren't camping that year, they're just like waking up early from Cochrane and driving out there. Yep. And so I think he said it was around noon, and they just kind of get into the national forest, and there's an elk right there just on the side of the road, and they get out of their truck and load their gun. I don't know, maybe it was loaded. I don't know. And shoot it, and they were home by like 12:30.
That sounds like a good old timer story.
Yeah, so didn't necessarily learn.
That actually reminds me, it's not a Larry story, but I'm going to share it with you guys, because I haven't told you two this story. I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but my neighbor, his father had a moose tag in Minnesota, and they went hunting and they drank too much and they really didn't hunt very much. Ended up coming home, wasting the tag. And so they're driving home, and this gentleman's passed. So I don't know what the statute of limitations is for someone who's passed, but they were driving home drunk from hunting a moose, and they hit a moose with their car. It just completely obliterated a moose. So what they did is one of the guys hitchhiked to town, bought the cheapest truck they could find, came back, put the moose in the back of that truck, and then just drove home and left the other truck on the side of the road.
Whoa. What?
I know. I've been trying to get a
vehicle.
Yeah, they just left the vehicle and then just bought a new one. And we're not talking about like a nice vehicle. He went to town and bought like a $500 beater that he would think would take the moose home. I'm still trying to get the hunting buddy of that story, the guy who didn't have the tag on the podcast, but he's hard to find. But yeah, it's just those old timer stories of like waking up too drunk and then just driving out, shooting something and being done with it. It's just those are classic stories.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My grandpa, who might have been only the handful of words he's ever said to me, hunted moose in Saskatchewan. And I asked him, like, oh, grandpa, is like, I'm young, right? I'm probably 10 or something. You hunt moose? How do you hunt moose? Well, you walk along in the out in the field in the snow and you find some moose trail. I'm like, yeah. And then you follow the moose trail for most of the day. I'm like, yeah. And there's a moose at the end of it, and you shoot it. And then he just walked off. Didn't laugh. Didn't smirk. It's like walked on. It's like, oh, good talk, Grandpa.
Yeah. Thanks for the sage advice.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Dylan, you got any more of Larry's stories you want to share? Otherwise, we'll wrap this thing up, man.
I think that's it for now, man. Really appreciate you having us on. That was a lot of fun. Telling those all again and some great memories.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So thank you guys for coming on. At this point, I don't know if you guys want to share your social handles. Most people do, but you guys definitely don't have to. We could just walk off into the sunset and have our favorite Larry memories and say goodnight.
You don't really have a social thing that I'm trying to build.
That's kind of what I was thinking. All right, guys.
Yeah, well, I don't even know my Instagram call sign or whatever. So
call sign,
that's kind of the only one.
It's
I'm
probably
off.
Better that way. It's probably better that way.
You can you can find Steven on Adult Friend Finder at the Great White Finder.
Yeah, and yeah. Dylan, you're on Grindr, right? So that's where you can look for him. All right, guys. Well, thanks again. I appreciate you guys.
All right, guys. That's it. Another couple stories in the books. Again, I want to thank Dylan and Steven for coming on the podcast. It was really nice to connect with them. Haven't hunted with either of them in a while since we've all been moving around a little bit. But it did feel very much like we were in our old hunting camp just shooting the shit and having fun with Larry. Only this time he couldn't defend himself. So I hope you guys enjoyed. I hope you guys kind of understand who Larry was, because he was quite the character and he had a big effect on me. Beyond that, guys, thank you again for 100. I really do appreciate it. Hopefully, if you listen to every single one of them. And here's to 100 more. Also, we are doing a big giveaway. You can find out who the winner is on Instagram. If you have some stories, or if you want to remember someone and you have stories about someone that's passed away for you, reach out to me. I'd love to have you on the podcast. Thank you all very much. Now get out there and make some stories of your own.